The Nonprofits. I'm your host, Dennis Lube, along with Matt Dillahunty.
Hello.
Russell Glasser.
Hello.
And Linnea Daly.
Hello.
And as long as no one objects, we're coming to you live from the Dillahunty International Studios in Austin, Texas, on the 11th of December, 2010. Of course, if you found Billy Squire's Christmas is a Time to Say I Love You the least bit presumptuous, we abjectly apologize. Hopefully, no one will be miffed by the fact that this show is sponsored by the Atheist Community of Austin, an unforgivably named organization, for the promotion of quiet, unassuming, and obsequious atheism, and completely unwarranted separation of church and state. If you want to know more about the toothless and emasculated ACA, call their fawning voicemail at 512-371-2911. Or visit their wishy-washy website at www.atheist-community.org. We're sorry to say the Nonprofits broadcasts its servile message live every Saturday from 2 to 3 o'clock on the off chance that no one will be listening. If you are piqued by anything we say or just don't like us, you can join the chat room by following the directions at www.nonprofitsradio.com and fill us with unbridled shame and remorse live on the air. So sit back and listen to our spineless and futile message, secure in the knowledge that we are more than willing to cave in to any grievance or demand you might make.
I don't even feel like doing a show now.
Well, if we were accommodationists, that would be our intro.
No, our intro would be, you guys are destroying the secular movement, which is something right. I got an email the other day.
Man.
You're not helping. The only way to advance the cause of atheism is to never, ever talk about atheism.
Yeah. First rule of atheism. Don't talk about atheism.
You guys don't actually accomplish anything. The best way to advance the secular progressive agenda is to host co-sponsored events with creationists like the National Council for Science Education Times. Yeah.
Snuggle with your enemies.
Sorry, I'm a huge fan of NCSE's support for,
you actually get stuff that says that?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
No doubt.
Okay.
I can hear.
Okay. Somehow I wind up being the only one quiet enough that I can't be picked up by microphones, I guess.
Well, you're off to the side of it, and she was leaning in directly at it, so she could be slightly farther.
Right.
So anyway, although it was really quiet, I can see it on the thing. So somebody probably didn't hear her. So we'll have to do better. Because we're all about doing better.
Yes.
And by the way, for those who noticed, we started a half hour late today. This is not going to be a long show. And this is the last Nonprofits of the year. We'll be back January 8th. And it's because there are parties and, I don't know, some big holiday or something.
Oh, yeah.
And then a new year thing right when the next one was going to fall. So we'll be back January 8th with the new season of Nonprofits. And this isn't, I don't think we're actually doing like a year-end wrap-up. I think it's just kind of normal.
We're just going to blabber.
Yeah, not really. But and also the thing is, we're all being driven into hiding by Christmas. They're winning the war this year.
Yes.
Yeah, I look forward to the December when I can completely forget that Christmas is going on. I can just go through and be like, oh, Christmas? Oh, yeah, that happened a couple days ago.
That'll be
a great day.
I like Christmas. Have no problem at all with the Christmas celebration
humbug.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't like holidays that celebrate, you know, waste and excess, just and stuff that we don't need. And I feel like that's the true meaning of Christmas.
Well, I think that we waste a lot on a lot of things.
That's true, and I don't like that either.
But we all participate, and it's all about things that make us happy. And so, for the people who are made happy by Christmas, or video games, or whatever,
or
any of these other wasteful thing,
I've already got what makes me happy.
Oh, that's disgusting.
So you'll be counseling your WoW accounts when you get home.
No, I already have it.
From my cold, dead hands.
All right, so we got miscellaneous news bits. Your who wants to start?
Excess. Yes. All right. What do we got?
Well, as everyone knows, in Kentucky, there's a Noah's Ark theme park being planned, which, as we discussed before the show, is being supported by tax breaks. Not that there's anything wrong with that, right, Matt?
Well, wrong? I think it's very wrong.
Okay.
Illegal? No.
All right.
Not necessarily.
Facing a rising tide of joblessness, the governor of Kentucky has found a solution. Build an ark. The state has promised generous tax incentives to a group of entrepreneurs who plan to construct a full-size replica of Noah's Ark, loaded with animals and actors, and make it the centerpiece of a Bible-based tourist attraction called Ark Encounter. Since Governor Stephen L. Beshear announced the plan on Wednesday, some constitutional experts have raised alarms over whether government backing for an enterprise that promotes religion violates the First Amendment's requirements of separation of church and state. But Mr. Beshear, a Democrat, said the arrangement posed no constitutional problem and brushed off questions about his stand on creationism. The people of Kentucky didn't elect me governor to debate religion, he said at a news conference. They elected me governor to create jobs. The theme park was conceived by the same Christian ministry that built the Creation Museum in Petersburg, Kentucky, where dioramas designed to debunk evolution show humans and dinosaurs coexisting peacefully on an earth created by God in 6 days. The ministry, Answers in Genesis, believes that the earth is only 6,000 years old, a controversial assertion even among many Bible-believing Christians, although not, I should mention, among anybody who knows the slightest thing about science. They just know it's wrong.
Now, how many jobs does this create, considering that the first ark was supposedly built by, like, what, one
eight
guy?
People. Yeah. They should be able to completely staff the place with eight people. I understand it's not actually floating, so despite building it to scale, they didn't have to worry about buoyancy. And I'd like somebody to go through and point out, like, I mean, I'm hoping that there will be atheist trips to this thing, as there have been to the Creation Museum, so that people can go through, take note of how many different kinds of animals there are, and how much space they take up, and then list all the stuff they left out.
Yeah, my thing, I kind of go back and forth on this, because I'd kind of love to go and see it as a matter of spectacle, much like PZ and those guys that went to the Creation Museum. On the other hand, I don't want to give them any money.
No.
Nope.
And I think that in part, you're talking about these particular young Earth creationists. They're building a theme park, which definitely appeals to young Earth creationists and biblical literalists, which is a relatively small portion of the number of Christians in the United States, or, you know, even though they're 70% Christian, the numbers, the anti-evolution numbers are about 50-some-odd%, and then the young Earth numbers are lower. So there's not an indication that that would make enough money from literalists. But the thing is, it's going to appeal to Christians all over the place.
Right.
Because they get to take their kids, whether they think this is the literal story or, you know, whether this is literally true or whatever, they get to take their kids to go experience the fun of a wholesome Christian theme park, you know, where you've got Noah's Ark. And they also get money from people who think they're batshit crazy and want to come look at the spectacle of it. So it is a potential money maker, at least on the short term.
Yeah, the moderates enable the fanatics. So
I've got to say, though, even when I was really deep into Christianity, I don't think anything could have made me go to Kentucky.
Well, so, wow. Location, location, location.
I know. So they, I mean, I understand Kentucky wanting to bolster their finances.
Well, yeah.
But
who wouldn't?
Well, I mean, I suppose by putting it in that state, they're guaranteeing a limited audience of some sort.
Yeah.
Well,
of course, where's the audience is limited already in different ways, but.
All right. Well,
and inbred.
The thing that I like the best about this park is not only are they building the Ark, but they're also building a replica of the Tower of Babel. So,
yeah. Not actual size, we hope.
Don't you think that that would be inciting God's wrath to create a Tower of Babel?
Excellent.
You know,
it's probably not to scale, and they've probably set a strict height limit on it so that they know that they don't exceed their limits.
It needs to be repeatedly hammered by lightning.
Does it say specifically how tall the Tower of Babel was in the Bible? Because, I mean, I'm suspecting that where's God now knocking down? Well,
the two towers.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's.
I think I've just discovered a new conspiracy theory to promote.
Dun dun dun.
Yeah.
God loves Thermate.
Allah.
But I mean, I don't know. I kind of wish we were at the point where this is just the same as, you know, a Disneyland, where because nobody believes in the Mickey Mouse,
right?
Yeah.
And the Snow White, and they all, but we all go there and go to Disneyland, and it's wicked fun.
And
it's
by the way,
fiction. Yeah.
By the way, Disneyland and a lot of those other theme parks make use of things that are generally considered mythic but were once religious. You'll find, you know, the Poseidon and the Little Mermaid story and Zeus and all these other, the pantheon of Greek gods, because
Hercules.
Because these things have transferred from being religious beliefs to ancient culture and art and those things. And I would say that to some degree, a lot of the early Christianity and the early cathedral. I love old cathedrals and the architectural design, and I like some of the religious art. I just don't like the fact that that message is still adhered to. So I'm with Linnea that I could see one day this would be kind of an amusing. They need to put in a roller coaster, though, because let's face it, parks suck without a roller coaster.
Yeah. Legoland's not that fun.
I could see maybe.
I've said many times that religious art ought to be appreciated as its art, even if you don't agree with the religious context.
Yeah, and generally I'm not opposed to it. There are exceptions, and it's all got to do with context. You posted a link to a video the other day.
Yes,
that took place at a public high school. It was at a talent show of students dressed as monks.
Yeah, I mean, you know, very silly. They have their hoods over their faces, and they're holding up signs, and I guess the sound system is playing Handel's Messiah Hallelujah chorus, and the monks like hold up little signs in time to the music, where they just are sort of closed captioning the music, but they're doing all sorts of fancy tricks because there's only like a dozen of them or so, and they're all like moving the signs around
and flipping them over.
It's on my Facebook page.
Hallelujah. You know, there's four signs there, and they're flipping them up in time.
When the high notes come, they hold their signs up really high, and this one little kid is jumping up and down because he can't reach.
And, you know, despite the fact that the lyrics are explicitly, you know, King of Kings and Lord of Lords forever, it was presented in a way that was obviously for humorous purposes, that was entertaining. They did it well. It's a little bit of a joke to have
entertainment purposes only.
Monks who have taken a vow of silence, holding up flashcards for the lyrics to a song. It's just too cool, and it didn't bother me at all. I mean, not only did it not bother me, I enjoyed it. I sat there and laughed because I found it amusing, and it would be nice if we get to a point where we could go to the Ark theme park, and nobody or almost nobody is going there as a pilgrimage. They're just going there to see an aspect of what humans used to believe that's kind of quirky and cool looking.
Well, you know, I'm remembering something that I heard a while back. Maybe it was about a year ago. I was listening to Todd Friel on Wretched Radio. And he was complaining about VeggieTales, which, you know, is a kids show with little computer animated vegetable characters who act out little Christianity plays.
Yes, certain irony there.
And he was saying that kids that VeggieTales is actually harming Christianity because kids get used to the idea that Christianity is associated with colorful cartoon characters, just like all the other fiction, and that when they grow up and outgrow some of these childish things, they will put aside Christianity along with VeggieTales. And I was thinking, he's absolutely right.
Yes, he is.
There
right.
is a,
yeah, that's
there,
right.
If, from the point of view of Christians, there is a problem, so to speak, in the culture with people coming to grips with the fact that the stories of Christianity are childish. But I think that the reason stuff like VeggieTales exists is because they're racing to catch up with staying relevant in a world that largely doesn't or is taking Christianity less and less seriously. I mean, just by numbers.
Yeah, it does. It does two things. One, it accomplishes the same type of thing that Schoolhouse Rock accomplished in us,
right?
Which is getting these little memes musically stuck in your head so that at 41 I'll be sitting around and out of the blue be going conjunction junction, you know. Yeah, and on the other hand, it does do some potential damage by linking these things to childhood and fantasy. But the same thing that Todd's saying about that, other Christians have said about, for example, mega churches that are using secular music and where the ministers are up there in, you know, jeans and a cool t-shirt and they're singing, you know, some actual pop
Hell
song
House.
And trying, like, when we went to Gateway,
yep,
they sang Superman, the pop okay. song, song Superman, or the alternative song, whatever. But they did it as if it was religious. Now, there are people who are saying that, well, this is doing harm to Christianity, and I think you're right. I think it's Christianity trying to catch up with the times, and I think it does harm to traditional Christianity.
Yep.
If every Christian stopped being a biblical literalist, stopped trying to legislate and impose their beliefs upon everybody else, I don't know that we'd have much to talk about with regard to Christianity.
So in this sense, and the reason I brought it up is, in some sense, why not consider this theme park a good thing? It's exactly what Linnea was saying a minute ago. Now we put Noah's Ark in the same realm as Disneyland.
Yeah, to some extent.
Yeah, let's hope that's
I think,
the case.
Like I said, I think there's two sides to this coin, and one is there's an aspect of it that actually does encourage credulity.
Sure. I mean, it's still being taken seriously, and
yeah.
I feel like that's the part that makes me uncomfortable. And also that they're getting tax breaks, which, I mean, is kind of interesting that there's all this hubbub about tax breaks being raised when all the churches still get tax breaks.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that maybe it'll kind of bring that issue up.
So, I don't want to skip past this because there's a lot of confusion because a lot of people are looking at this and saying, holy crap, this is clearly a religious message. How on earth can this possibly be legal? And while I'm not a lawyer and there are lawyers who are probably going to address this in greater detail, the simplest aspect is that the ARC organization is a for-profit place creating an amusement park that's open to the public. If they ever discriminate, we'll have a lawsuit based on that. But also, it's a creator of jobs, a creator of revenue, and it has, I mean, evidently they've shown the numbers to say that there's X amount of interest in something like this to create revenue. There is, though, a potential legal challenge, and it has, right now, it's, as far as I can tell, legal despite being disgusting in many ways. The disgusting aspect is something that we can actually see challenged in court because the government's tax break in this case could be shown to have the purpose and effect of endorsing a religious view. Mm-hmm. And if that is demonstrated, then this tax break would be in violation of the Constitution. But that's going to have to go to court.
Yeah. Now, when we were preparing for the show, did I actually overhear someone saying that they were going to have the construction workers that work on this thing sign something?
I couldn't find that.
Yeah, okay, I'm looking that up right now. I'll get back to you in 5 minutes.
All right.
Yeah, if that's the case, if their employment practices for the building of this are discriminatory, then I think this is an easy challenge. Mainly,
And it wouldn't be a surprise because I know for a fact that Answers in Genesis is one of those organizations that makes their that makes their main employees sign on this statement of faith.
Yeah. And so kind of spinning off in as we're talking a little bit about potential discrimination, Martin had an email exchange with somebody this past week about okay. Lene found it.
Okay. So Governor Steve Beshear?
I think I was saying Beshear, but Beshear. I don't know that.
Said Thursday that he will require the state's contract with developers of a Noah's Ark-based theme park to prohibit them. Oh, wait. If they're to prohibit the tax incentives if they do discriminate. And right now they admit that they are wrestling with the prospect of not. They want to require the employees to sign a statement of faith, but they are afraid that they'll lose their tax incentives.
Okay,
absolutely.
If they do that.
So it seems that at least
they're wrestling with it right now.
Seems that on that grounds, at least the government did the right thing, saying, "Yeah, we can give you a tax break, but you can't discriminate because that would be illegal."
Right.
My estimation of Steve Beshear's integrity just went up a notch, at least.
Yeah, although it's pretty low.
It was pretty low
to start with. Yeah. You know, it's like me giving the Pope kudos on the last show.
Right.
For half-stepping on condoms.
Well, I mean, you know, small steps. When people are making change, you know, it's like training a dog, you know. You got to praise them when they do the right thing.
I would love to just walk up to Governor Beshear with a clicker and go... Good boy.
I started an Ask Me Anything post on Reddit this week, which is how Leo Behe, who we talked to a couple of weeks ago, got noticed. And somebody asked me, have you ever personally converted somebody away from Christianity? And what I said, and what I usually say is, I don't think it ever happens as one step, but there's always a, there's always a series of transitions where you go from like maybe fundamentalist Christian to moderate Christian to extremely doubtful moderate Christian to agnostic to atheist. And I think that I'm satisfied if we can help move people one step along that path.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
by the way, having brought up the Reddit thread, lots of people were asking me if I would ask you to do one, Matt.
Reddit thread?
So people, it's just a talk forum, and then people will ask you questions, and you will answer them if you want.
How long do I have to be strapped to this thread?
Just for like a day. It only stays on for about a day.
I mean, here and there during a day.
Yeah.
I could pick a day and do a Reddit thread, I guess.
Okay.
We'll help him set it up.
Yeah, because I'm a Reddit idiot.
So am I. Linnea loves Reddit.
Matt's not really. He doesn't even know what narwhals are about.
I'll have to check it out.
Anyway, sorry.
Aren't those like unicorn manatees? Manatees? I'm just... All right.
Yeah, so, we were saying moving people one step along the process, and I think you were going to say that before I interrupted you.
Well, yeah, we get email from people on a fairly regular basis saying, you know, thanks for the show. I used to have this position, and part because of what you guys have done on either show or both shows, I now have this position. And sometimes it's somebody saying, you know, I used to be a fundamentalist, and now I'm a more moderate, you know, believer. I still don't agree with you guys on the existence of God, or now I'm a deist. And there are some people who are like, you know, I used to run around calling myself an agnostic, and now I'm an out and active atheist.
Yeah.
So it's cool. I'm fine.
And we had a guy show up to, I guess it was Threadgills one time, who, has been a frequent caller, and in fact, even a trolling caller at some point in the past. And he stopped being a troll and started listening seriously to the stuff we were saying. And he said, I'm still a Christian, but, you know, I love the dialogue, and I find a lot of merit and interest to what you guys have to say. I consider that a win. yeah. even if he's not an atheist.
So the troll came to Threadgill's, so you guys did feed the trolls.
Yes.
I don't think he sat with us. He just showed up with a date and then made a point of coming
yes.
in and saying hi.
Yeah, we didn't feed him. He might have fed himself, as trolls tend to do.
Yes.
But no, when I was at the debate at UMBC, there were people who came up and said similar things. Cool. And, you know, it happens quite often. But Martin had this conversation with a guy because we were talking about the potential discrimination of the Answers in Genesis group, where this guy was saying, and he cited a blog post by him from 2008, where it was talking about the number of incidents of harassment and what's the right word? I don't know, crimes against atheists and agnostics because they are atheists and agnostics. And like in 2008, there were six, not 6%, but six cases of this. And we already know about the family in Oklahoma and everything else. And the point that Hemet made, which I agree with, is that it's not so much that we can say these things aren't happening, it's that they may not be reported. And also, you're talking about a very small percent of the population, many of whom aren't out. And yet, there are instances where people, in a matter of religious disagreement, because they do not agree with somebody's position, that person may be an atheist and not saying they're an atheist, and there may be, you know, animosity directed towards them. There's a news story out of Indianapolis about a father of three who is currently fighting the system. He had his custody rights removed. And he's convinced that based on comments from the judge that his custody rights were revoked because he's an agnostic. And he said, I'd never imposed my religious beliefs on my children. Matter of fact, our kids go to Christian daycare. That when we had joint legal custody, I had to agree to it for the last 3 or 4 years. Scarberry said he'll appeal the judge's ruling. And he'll have until December 1st to do that. I haven't seen an update on this story since the appeal. But there was a comment, and damned if this story doesn't have it. There was a comment from the actual transcript of the custody hearings where the judge made a comment that was akin to, we're concerned about his ability to be moral without, you know, believing in a God type thing. This type of thing, this one got reported, it's getting press, you know, it's been on faux news and other stuff, but I have friends who, during their divorce, or I have a friend for sure, and I won't give any names or talk about it in detail, but this friend was in a divorce.
Are you talking about our mutual blogger friend?
Yes, and I wasn't going to go that far, but...
Okay.
Was in the process of getting a divorce, in part because they are outspoken in their atheism online. This created, well, the pretense is that this created a conflict with their spouse. In truth, their spouse was anxious to go have an affair. And their spouse, who hadn't been Catholic or practicing Catholic in years, when it came to the custody hearing, showed up wearing their confirmation thingy and overtly being Catholic and raising the issue of the religion to the specifically with towards the issue of custody, of whether or not, you know, one should have custody over the other as a matter of religious preference. I don't want my kids learning about, you know, atheism.
Yeah.
And it's been a nightmarish battle.
Yeah, now, well, it worked, is the thing.
Yeah. This didn't get reported or picked up by news sources. It didn't get reported as a crime or anything else. There are people who have probably been... There's a limit to what kind of jobs I can get. Because I am out under my own name. And if I lose my current job and I run around and submit resumes to a lot of places, as I did a few years ago... Googling my name, which is something almost any employer is going to do, anybody who reads your resume is at least somewhat likely to go see if there's stuff about you on the internet. Maybe they're not looking for anything nefarious. Maybe they're looking for, you know, have you published anything? Do you, you know, have any relevant expertise, or are you cited anywhere, that type of thing. But if they Google your name and the first thing that comes up is the, you know, umpteen thousand pages of videos that I've done for the ACA, things that I've written for various websites, articles, blogs, etc., then that is going to, in many occasions, absolutely prevent them from even calling me in for an interview if the interviewer finds it offensive. In some cases, there are employers who would avoid that just because the impression is that I would be detrimental to the public perception of their company because of that. And all of this is tied up in the general trend in the United States of assuming one thing about religion and another thing about irreligion. And that sort of discrimination, whether it's explicit or implicit, happens all the time and doesn't necessarily get reported, and it's hard to prove that there's anything even going on. I went to a job interview where, I kid you not, and I probably mentioned it on the show before, I'm sitting there in an office with a guy who's got a Footprints poster on his office wall and a signed autograph of George W. Bush, asks me about the last book I read, and then asks, do you feel that you have any transcendent purpose?
Oh boy.
Now, that wow. question does not come up in job interviews.
It's not supposed to. No.
It is, and I answered as best I could. I said, well, I'm not exactly sure what you're asking. If you're asking if I live my life solely for me, then I'd say that I am the primary focus of my life, but I have family and friends and loved ones, and that I live my life, you know, the best I can for all of those things. If you're asking about some kind of transcendent, beyond, you know, humanity and things, then no, I don't feel I have a transcendent purpose in that regard. And I answered it honestly, because first of all, if I'd answered it dishonestly, yeah. There's no way I was getting the job, because it was clear when that question came up that he'd already gone around looking to see who the hell I was.
Yeah. In all honesty, I've rarely had that issue come up, and I've even been on one job where it turned out that one of the people hiring me liked to watch the show. You know, there was a pretty unpleasant 6 months last year where I was working for a company where, you know, it was up north of Austin in the real part of Texas. Mm-hmm. Where on my first day I knew there was going to be a problem when they had me sign a statement that said that I would I would be devoted to high Christian principles.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, I'm in a fairly advanced professional field where usually you get beyond people who bring up that kind of bullshit. If I were, I mean, you know, not to pick on anyone in particular, but like a construction worker, I would imagine there would be a lot of cases where you would run into people who would give you, you know, a lot more cases where you would run into people who give you problems. I mean, ways I'm maybe privileged to be where I'm at.
Actually, I'm not so sure. I know a lot of, especially small independent construction companies, may happen to be primarily religious, but they're also focused on actually getting the job done. And as long as you show up and can, you know, run a nail gun and swing a hammer and get the building put up or whatever else, there's not a lot of time for discussion in there. And there's not a lot of investigation of employees as representatives to the public. It's not like the construction worker is meeting new potential clients and might get into a side conversation about religion.
Keep in mind that the most useless member of the Buffy cast was employed as a construction worker. Just says something right there. Okay, but I mean, I gotta say, I'm
Some
sure he's,
my best friends
he saved
are
the world.
Yeah, come on.
He's the only one that could stop Willow from destroying the world. How is he most useful? Anyway,
using the power of love, that is so lame.
It was like the lamest thing ever. I love Joss, but that was lame. That was a complete cop out at the end. But
don't take money, don't take fame.
But going back to the actual conversation.
I mean, I feel like there are a lot of fans of the nonprofits and the ACA, and I feel like, I mean, a lot of fans would be geeking out if Matt Dillahunty came and interviewed for a job at their place.
It may work either way, and it depends, being in the tech field. One thing I'll say is that my previous employer before that period of unemployment, I had no problems. I worked side by side with some other atheists. There was another member of the show who actually worked there, and I would get in the elevator to ride up to my office in the morning, and about once a month or so, somebody would say, "Hey, good show yesterday," you know. And my current employer, I work side by side with religious individuals and have no problems at all. And yet, two different people have come up from other. I'm a remote employee, so we have offices all over. And there are people who come from the remote offices to Austin. And when they get here, on two different occasions, somebody's like, "Hey, wait, you're Matt from the Atheist Experience." And I was like, "Yeah," because, you know, in one case, one of them's a little higher on the food chain than me. And they're like, "Hey, we, you know, love your show," and blah, blah, blah. So it can work both ways. The point is that the discrimination exists even if it's not being reported. And in most cases, it's probably not being reported. Just like we're pretty confident that most cases of rape don't get reported. And most cases of child abuse and incest and battery, you know, don't get reported. So making an appeal to the numbers and saying, "Well, there was only six cases in 2008, so you guys can't be very oppressed, and clearly Christians aren't the big meanies that you say they are." For the record, we're not running around saying Christians are beating up on atheists, because he was like, "Oh, they're good, you know, they clearly don't kick your ass." We're talking about fundamental rights. We're talking about one group, by virtue of having a majority, attempting to impose their view of morality onto other people. Not only is it unconstitutional, it's fucking wrong.
So one instance where they are.
Yeah, there are places that have it in worse than in the U.S., though.
So we got a segue to the next story.
Okay, I guess I'm doing this story.
Go for it.
So it's been going on for quite a while that Uganda has this anti-gay, you know, kill the gays bill. But recently, Mr. Bahati. David Bahati, thank you. He's a hottie. Came on to the Rachel. He can be hot regardless of what views he holds. All right. He came on to the Rachel Maddow show and talked about this bill that's going on, and it was pretty ridiculous to listen to, because it was very clear that there was no reason for him personally to be supporting this bill, and he was just kind of spitting out these reasons that, you know, Christian fundamentalists had fed to him.
Well, yeah, some background. He's not just supporting it. He sponsored the bill. And he did so at the behest of the family, this secretive group that all lives together in Washington. And, you know, they can't get away with stuff like that here, although they'd like to. But by going out and promoting it through basically missionary work in backwards countries, they can get away with something like that.
So the clip's actually available on YouTube. It's like 14 minutes long, and I'm going to play like the first 30, 40 seconds of it so you guys can hear Rachel Maddow talking about what she's going to talk about on here. And then if you want to go to YouTube and watch the rest of it, we can do that.
For the first few minutes, she just talks about slippery slope arguments, so I'm not sure that you should start at the beginning.
Well, then we won't start at the beginning. We'll pick a random spot 5 minutes in and give you a few seconds, and then you can go to it. So this may completely suck, but it's an experiment with my new setup.
All right, good luck.
Cool.
By all other responsible authorities that have looked into it, you're saying specifically that foreigners are investing in Uganda to recruit children into homosexuality. I've heard claims like that over and over again. I have never, ever heard any credible evidence of it.
Rachel, I need to tell you that it is not an allegation. It's a fact that recruitment is taking place in Uganda, especially in single-sex schools. It's a fact that is very disturbing. It's a fact that is not only disturbing people who don't believe in homosexuality. Even the pro-gay groups have condemned this. So it is...
So people don't believe in homosexuality. In the future, what we'll do is we'll pick up actual clips that have something relevant.
Yes.
And we'll play those.
But they're being recruited. I feel like
that was the most relevant clip to me, actually.
Yeah.
Where he was talking about how they're doing this recruitment and they're really going after the children of Uganda and making them believe in something that they don't want to believe. But that's exactly what Christian missionaries are doing in these African countries. They're going after the kids. They're feeding them all this bullshit. And that is really the real problem. And then all this hate comes out of it. So,
well, if you did listen to the clip to Rachel Maddow's monologue at the beginning of it, she was basically saying people have been making up this bullshit excuse about gay people targeting children since for decades, since any time that they were trying to outlaw, you know, adult consensual homosexual behavior. You
basically,
know, any sodomy laws, they say it's for the kids.
Yeah. Real quick, kind of a sidetrack. When I wasn't saying that this wasn't relevant, because I like the fact that he said that. It's, there was a clip in there where he's a little more explicit about what they're trying to do. Mm-hmm. And would have to look for that. But there's no way for me to say what I'm about to say without it coming across as arrogant or condescending. And so I'll just say it.
Okay.
I've had a number of conversations with people, and I've tried to come up with examples. If you are really good at something and particularly knowledgeable about something, it takes almost no time for you to recognize when somebody else is talking about something, roughly how knowledgeable they are about the subject. And in many cases, you can immediately spot that they know far less than you do. And in other cases, you can spot that they know more than you do. Knowing what you don't know and being sufficiently familiar with a subject is critical. And so recently I had a conversation with somebody who, and it was long, and it didn't even get close to an end until last night, where he was convinced that if he went out and investigated exorcisms, he'd be able to find proof for the existence of God. And I was explaining how this, you know, how many things are just wrong in that. And as he's going through and talking, I'm like, no, you don't understand. You don't understand the nature of logic. You don't understand syllogisms. You don't understand the difference between validity and soundness. You don't understand critical thinking and skepticism. You do not understand epistemology and the way that we go about finding reliable evidence. You don't understand that you are no expert in this area, and so that even if you witness something that you couldn't explain, it would be fallacious for you then to attribute a supernatural explanation for it.
Yep.
You don't understand all of these things. And he says he's convinced that he had a new, novel argument for the existence of God, and strung me along for days on this while he was working
on it. Well, it helps to be completely ignorant.
He submitted his argument for God in the form of a script for debaters to read, because he's convinced the argument is more powerful and meaningful in a debate scripted format, which demonstrated so much misunderstanding on his part. And then when I get the argument, it is the cosmological first cause argument. It is Kalam.
Oh,
and it is ill-formed by somebody who clearly doesn't understand it, and he thinks this is new and novel. This goes back to Plato and Aristotle talking about prime movers.
Yeah,
or worse, Pascal's wager.
Yeah, and so when I finally replied to him, it was like I had already predicted all of this, and I predicted it to him in emails. I told him, I said, here's the thing: if you really care about the truth, you need to first figure out how you go about finding the truth. And so when I listened to get back to this thing, when I listened to this clip and the words "people who don't believe in homosexuality" come out of somebody's mouth, we instantly know what his prejudices are and what he doesn't comprehend about this because of them. Because believing in homosexuality is a key phrase for people who don't actually understand the issues and actually have an agenda.
If you listen to the whole interview, what you find, and one of the obvious ways in this guy is extremely ignorant, is that whenever he can't think of something to respond to what Rachel says specifically, he falls back on very political-sounding talking points. he'll go back to, again, Rachel, I must reiterate that we are doing this to protect the children. Yeah. Or he'll say, and bear in mind that this is a Uganda issue. The Ugandans have different culture from the United States, and so they should respect our right to do what we want. And what we want to do is, you know, kill people who have a particular way, kill gay people.
Particular lifestyle.
And the other talking point that he keeps falling back on a lot is, you know, look, I am not, I have no hate in my heart. This is not out of hate. I am not Hitler or anything. And he says this, Rachel has to point out, dude, I didn't say anything about hate or Hitler. You are the only one bringing this up.
Yeah. And
you know, he's been briefed, is the point.
Yeah, he's got his own point.
He doesn't know shit, except...
Somebody in the chat room pointed out that I gave a long-winded explanation of the Dunning-Kruger effect, and it was because I've been getting emails complaining that when in the early days of doing both shows, we took more time in explaining logical fallacies and ideas in a way that was accessible to anybody. And lately, we have gotten... into the, well, that's an argument from ignorance, an argument from popularity, et cetera, without actually explaining the argument. And so I didn't want to just say, I've had difficulty explaining the Dunning-Kruger effect to people, because there are people, even amongst our group, who would be like, huh? What do you
What's
mean?
That?
So, people deserve an explanation every time.
Yep. So let's do more to explain. The problem is that this goes back to the actual kind of... incident of the Dunning-Kruger that we were talking about, which is I'd like to explain things to people in a way that they can comprehend it, but there are some low-level misunderstandings that no matter how many times I explain them to somebody, I just can't seem to get through
when
to
you're
them.
Fractally wrong, you're fractally wrong.
Yeah.
So the sad thing to me about this is that I know that a lot of the poor... Okay, I'm not sure about Uganda. I haven't looked into it. But I know that a lot of the times, these poor countries have a problem with child trafficking and with child prostitution. And, sometimes they become, for tourists, from people... tourists from, the Western states... Western countries that can go there where there's not these strict laws. So there can be this effect, but I mean, usually it's female children, so it's not really a gay thing. It's a lot of the times that these children, mostly girls, are being, kidnapped or bought or sold or stuff as child prostitutes. And that is a legitimate problem that mm-hmm. all of this effort and money and, all of this force could have gone into fighting in Uganda. I mean, this guy, David Bahati, could have been fighting, child prostitution. He could have been going after the madams and, all of the brothels. And he could have been doing something that's legitimately good. Still not with the death penalty, I would say. But he could have been, breaking all this stuff up that does have actual evidence for it.
Yeah, it reminds me a little bit of how the Catholic Church is stockpiling hordes of money and property that could benefit real people in many real ways. Meanwhile, they're so anxious to protect their hordes that they will... specifically or intentionally thwart law enforcement attempts to investigate the issues with pedophile priests.
Yep.
And by the way, I don't want to attribute this just to Catholics, because we already know that the incidence for pedophilia amongst the clergy is high outside of the Catholic Church, and even higher in a few limited denominations. Ooh. But what we don't see in those cases all the time is this concerted effort by the actual organization to block and hinder any investigation. And that's what we see in the Catholic Church. WikiLeaks just came out with something about it yesterday or today.
Yeah.
So I was trying to help Linnea out by looking up Uganda and human or and child prostitution.
Thanks.
And
I don't want to accuse them unwarranted.
Not only do they have a significant child prostitution issue, but they also have a child sacrifice problem, apparently.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah, the police are to permanently deploy officers who will check vehicles and motorcycles as part of measures to fight child sacrifice and human trafficking.
By the way, to kind of change topics for a minute, there's one thing that's not in my list of news items, but that Beth reminded me earlier that we needed to add. And I'm going to put this out as a positive thing. But let me clarify that before somebody goes nuts. Richard Dawkins' 95-year-old father just died. I don't think the death thing is the positive here. But if you go to the website, richarddawkins.net, you can see, you can read an interesting essay about his life with pictures. You can see Dawkins honoring, you know, the great man that he respected who was his father. And it is truly, in my opinion, a celebration of an individual's life and contributions and what they meant to somebody else. And it's something that the atheist communities in general have, not done well at. We have a problem in dealing with death and grief amongst members. Because we don't have the easy cut-and-paste mythical answers that religions offer. And we don't necessarily, I mean, because atheism is nothing more than the disbelief of theistic claims, we don't have organizations that are designed with counselors to help people out. And these are areas right. where I think the community of atheists can and should do a better job, at least in helping people get to real experts in, for example, grief counseling, but also in educating the people about everybody, not just atheists, about life in general. And we've had this conversation over and over again that atheism, you know, doesn't give anybody hope for life after death. And that's so ass backwards. And people have been, this phrase of religion giving you a disease and then offering you the cure has been bandied about over and over the last couple of months in conversations all over the place. And I think that the death issue is a prime example of that. They've set up a fantasy land and a proposition that your life cannot have meaning and purpose unless it comes from somewhere else and unless you're going to live forever somewhere else. And this sets up a false expectation in people. And that if we actually demonstrated or taught people about the value of each minute of the life that you actually live, that we could ease the grief of people, because it would be much more of a, you know, here's an individual who lived to be, you know, 95, had by all accounts a remarkable and great life that should be appreciated and valued. And while we are sad that he's no longer around, we can still appreciate that, and we don't have to be mired in grief. Now, and I'll let you go after this. I want to say this is obviously different from somebody who loses a young child. The grief in that right. process is very different. But I think that it's a good example, and I think we could be doing a better job.
Just a small contention. I've never quite been comfortable with the assertion that religion gives you a disease and then offers a cure. I think it would be more accurate to say that religion gives you hypochondria and then offers you a cure.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, they give you an expectation, which might as well be hypochondria.
They give you general dissatisfaction with the way things are. I mean, to that extent, I mean, you know, they tell you that you should be unhappy that life doesn't last forever.
However,
they tell you,
I'm okay go ahead. With that unhappiness. I mean, that's you know, 100, 200 years ago, I would be unhappy that the average lifespan is 40 years. So I think it's a fine thing to be unhappy with what you have, because that pushes you forward to improve humanity.
Here's my thing on the hypochondria. I don't necessarily disagree, at least in the context that you're talking about, that they're giving you a false thing. But the other thing that they do is very real. And while it isn't a disease in the, you know, strictly pathogenic sense, it is a disease in the sense that they impose real guilt upon people, real depression, and people like Marlene Winnell, who we talked to at the Freethought Convention, are dealing with something they've dubbed religious trauma syndrome, of people who leave religion and cannot get over this overwhelming guilt and depression and this sense of loss. Even though they know and understand that it's like somebody told you you had $1 million and then you found out you don't and you feel a sense of loss. But that's generally minor. If you've believed something your entire life and built the foundations of your understanding of reality upon it, and it's yanked out from under you by reason, it's not always easy to come to grips with that. Some people have an easier time. I had a fairly easy time with it. Other people do not. And so I wouldn't be so quick to really call out hypochondria in all situations, because the pain that they impose upon people and the guilt that they use to control people are certainly real.
Well, I mean, that just gets into the whole, you know, if a disease is only in your head, is it still doing harm? Is it still just as harmful? And I don't really want to get into that. But I am going to say that, you know, dealing with the whole grief and funerals and all of that stuff, I'm donating my body to science. And you fans are all welcome to come to the autopsy.
Awesome.
Yeah. Cool.
I'm saying that right now. You can hold me to it.
Well, yeah, because you'll be dead.
That's true, I guess.
Yeah, you know, it's not like
you won't have any say over what we do.
I'll come haunt you. Oh, wait. No.
Yeah. I'll be there and you just won't know it. So the Queen of England has come out and said that atheists are moral.
That's good. That's for her. Far cry from our officials. Yeah.
And I think that's just about all that really needs to be said, because it shouldn't be news.
Thank you. Out of respect for the wonderful thing she said, we will not read her statement in a high-pitched Monty Python voice.
No. Yeah.
I'm wondering what.
Now I want to.
Yeah, I know.
Well, we should move on before you guys are further tempted.
Yeah, we let's not be disrespectful to the person who at least said something reasonably nice about us.
What's next?
Let's talk about the football player.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Buffalo Bills wide receiver Stevie Johnson dropped a game-winning touchdown in the end zone Sunday. This is, what, November? Late November. In overtime against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Anyone has ever tossed the pigskin around in the backyards dreams of that scenario, minus the drop, of course. After the game, Johnson's Twitter account filed this tweet. I praise you 24/7, and this is how you do me? You expect me to learn from this? How? I'll never forget this, ever. Thanks, though.
Thanks, though.
And it is all caps and using all that unique Twitter shortening. I find that kind of refreshing.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, it's a logical extension of the,
if everybody's
going to
credit God
win,
for,
you know,
yeah, if
God
everybody's
going to
credit God for making you win, he must be making the other team lose.
That's
so
right.
I mean, a little, you know, a little consistency there is a good thing.
What I don't understand is how people can think that having an invisible man on the field fixing the outcome of the game is not cheating.
Yes.
It's stunning.
That's why he's so mad.
Yeah, he failed to cheat. He's angry that he was unable to cheat. Wow.
Or, no, I mean, perhaps in this case he's angry that the cheating went against him.
It could be, yeah. Yeah,
you know,
but
the
fan prayed
for him to drop it.
I would like to see the loser of an athletic event contest his loss on the fact that the winning team admits that they couldn't have won without an extra supernatural guy on the field helping them make all their catches and make all their throws.
Right.
They're admitting to cheating. They might as well be disqualified.
Yeah, except we don't allow spectral evidence.
Well, yeah. we don't have to. They're admitting to it anyway.
It doesn't matter. It's still inadmissible. Admitting to spectral evidence is no different. It's still inadmissible.
But consider this. It doesn't matter if the if the thing that you're, if let me put it this way, if you steal answers to a test that turn out not to be the answers to the test, and you fail the test because of that, you still cheated, even though those weren't actually the answers.
That's not spectral evidence.
No, no, it's
this
not
is
spectral
like saying,
evidence,
this
but
is like,
it doesn't matter if the thing that's, I don't know how to phrase it.
An admission,
it doesn't matter if it doesn't exist.
No, an admission is not confirmation. It would have to be confirmed that they actually cheated, not that they just believed they cheated.
That's the whole point of my test.
No,
it
would be confirmed.
You tried cheat. Your intent was to cheat.
Right.
It doesn't matter that the
answers
to the test didn't exist. You know?
No, no, no. The answers to the test do exist. You
right.
happen
you
to
thought,
get the wrong
you
ones.
You thought they were wrong. Yeah, yeah. So you didn't have the answers to the test.
No, no. How can I do this? You have to actually demonstrate that there was any possibility of them cheating. Somebody who thinks they've cheated because aliens are beaming messages into their head isn't cheating. They have the intent of cheating.
They have the intent of cheating. They are cheaters, therefore.
No, no, no.
Yes.
Intent is not act.
Oh, when you intend to cheat, it's not an act?
If you intend to murder, is that an act? Intent is not an act. It's
would
a different
say
thing.
If you, like, poison someone's drink and then they didn't drink it, then that's an attempted murder.
Yes, it's attempted murder. You took an action that would necessarily have, by evidence, resulted in X.
Well, attempted cheating is still
but
is still
the
a
people
crime.
Contacting
the people at the football game, they pray to win. That
so
pray
what?
Is an act.
So what?
The prayer is an act. They're trying to cheat.
So what?
So crossing the act.
Crossing your fingers.
They're putting the poison in the thing and the
no,
guy's
they're
not
putting. No, they're not.
No,
that's,
they're praying.
No.
That's an act.
Dennis.
Sorry, it's an act.
They're not putting poison in there.
They're praying for poison.
They're praying for poison. They're keeping
no,
their fingers
no, no,
crossed
no,
for
no,
poison.
No, 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 no.
It's, well, I mean, I think it's
praying
kind
is
of
how you get a supernatural being to do what you want it to, supposedly.
And if there was any demonstration that that was true, then it would be cheating. But until there is, it's like saying you tried to poison somebody with water.
It seems like trying to hire a guy to put a hit on somebody. I mean, you are specifically asking this person
no.
that you believe will do it.
That doesn't matter because here's the difference. Wow, I can't believe we're even discussing this. The
I
difference,
know, Matt, what
the difference,
discussing.
The difference is that there are demonstrably people that you can hire to kill people. There is not anybody that you can appeal to who can supernaturally affect the outcome of the game.
Right.
Yeah, but
I mean,
everybody involved,
guy,
the
yeah,
football
nothing.
Players and the audience and everybody, agrees there are.
Which doesn't matter one fucking bit when it comes to the actual thing.
Well, okay, a while ago...
Sure, okay.
Someone, this was a legitimate thing. I don't know if this is picking me up, but I have a cat in my lap now, so I'm not getting closer to the mic. I could pick it up. All right. So, you know, there was a priest who sexually abused a kid, and then this priest tried to talk to his neighbor to see if he could hire the neighbor or anyone that the neighbor knew
yes.
as a hitman.
Yes.
Do you think that that is some kind of crime?
Of course.
Well, then that is an attempt to do something wrong, and it's still a crime.
The neighbor was not a hitman and was not going to do it, right?
The neighbor was not a hitman. The neighbor called the police or the FBI. I can't remember quite who. The FBI set up a sting where the neighbor said, I'm not going to do the hit, but I know someone who can do the hit. And that person was an undercover cop. So the priest went to the undercover cop. Priest said, I want to hire you as for the hit. You know, they got all this on evidence.
Yeah. Yes.
That is an attempt to hire a hitman.
Yes.
There were no, you know... the kid didn't actually get killed by a hitman yeah. because it wasn't a real hitman.
Yes,
that's still a crime.
Yes, it is. And where's the legal thing for attempting to cheat?
There's.
I didn't say legal.
Well, that's the thing that matters.
No, no. What matters is what the sports rules say. If you, you know,
no.
I mean,
if you and I run a foot race around the parking lot and I believe that I'm faster than you because God makes me faster than you, that's not an attempt by me to cheat, and it's not remotely relevant. There has to be
there has to be
a demonstration of remote effectiveness for this to even matter. The fact of the matter is there are hitmen who will kill people, and if this priest had gone to someone else, that kid may be dead. And that's the reason why it's a crime. Those people in the stands can pray to any number of supernatural things that they want to, and there's no reason to think that any of them will ever be effective, and that's why it's not a crime.
It's not a crime. But they are cheaters.
They're not
trying to cheat.
Trying to cheat is not cheating.
So trying to cheat...
Trying to cheat is
no
one thing.
There's no problem with that. That's fine.
No. Okay. No, I didn't say
yes,
there's...
Yes, you did.
I didn't
you
say...
You just say there's no crime. There's nothing wrong with it, right?
No. There's a difference.
What's wrong with it?
Wow, Dennis.
What's wrong with it?
Dennis, can I finish? There's
Please.
A difference between not a crime and nothing's wrong with it.
Okay, so what's wrong with trying to cheat?
It is unethical to try to
cheat.
There
we go. Thank you. All right. I'm done. They're being unethical. Their sportsmanship is going right out the window as soon as they pray to an invisible being to fix the game.
I never disagreed with that.
So it seems all right. We're all in violent agreement.
Yes.
Now, I should mention that Steve Johnson made a follow-up post where he said, actually several follow-up posts, where he said, first, I learned a lot within 24 hours. At, 24 hours after people just reamed him for blaming God. And by the way, this guy uses really weird capitalization. I mean, he just capitalizes random words, which I can understand the abbreviations on Twitter, but anyway. But just random things are capital. I learned a lot within 24 hours, saw both sides, ups and downs. I am happy and thankful for yesterday. Without Sunday, I wouldn't have grew closer with the Lord.
Oh.
And then he says, and no, I did not blame God. People, seriously? Come on. I'd simply cried out and asked why, just like y'all did when something went wrong in your life.
Life. So... All right, on a different tack, the Ask an Atheist show on cable access TV in Seattle.
Yes.
Unfortunately, the TV station is going off the air at the end of 2010.
Ah.
The show won't go down with it, though. It'll move to the radio station at KLAY. KLAY. That's just too cool. 1180 a.m. In order to obtain the seed money for the first few episodes, the crew is holding a benefit comedy show featuring local freethinkers at the Tacoma Comedy
Club.
It's
already happened.
It's already fucking happened. Well, they held it on December 9th, and we hope they did really well.
Yeah. I think that their show is going to get better from being on the radio because I would bet that more crazy people listen to the radio than watch cable access.
And we all have faces for radio? No.
Well, they do.
I'm sure, though, that despite the fact that the comedy event to raise money is already over, that if somebody wanted to donate, they would have a mechanism for that as well.
Because they actually have to line up advertisers now and help pay for the cost of being on radio, unlike cable access. And that was one of the things that prevented us from seriously pursuing nonprofits on radio, because I don't think anyone is really willing to put in the work at being all volunteers.
Yeah. You can go to askanatheist.tv. I'm wondering if that'll change since they're not going to be on TV. And it sucks. One of the things that's going away in this country is public access television. And Austin is one of the last cities that allow us to do not only shows, but live shows. This may go away. It's hanging by a thread constantly. We've already made the determination, and we did the test run here at my place, that if the station goes under, what we will do is if we get a building, we'll have a studio in there to do it, or we'll do it at somebody's house, whatever, and do a live streaming show over the internet and take calls by Skype, just like we did at our place. So we'll keep this going however we can. Right now, we're still fairly safe, even though the show's been cut down to an hour.
Right. But, I mean, don't go thinking, people, that this is the preferable solution and we'd be well rid of access, because You know, we get a lot of things that we like out of public access. It would be a bigger hassle and, you know, more expensive for the ACA and difficult to reach a local audience if we right. were not on public access.
So the Christmas billboards are getting lots of publicity.
Getting out of control.
Of course, the Catholic League responded to American Atheist billboard by putting up a billboard on the opposite side of the tunnel saying, you know it's real this season, celebrate Jesus. And they're absolutely entitled to do that, and I couldn't yeah. care less.
But I mean, it's stupid if they think that this is some form of defiance, because the reason there was an atheist billboard in the first place is because Christmas is already fucking everywhere. So, I mean, adding another one is just another drop in the bucket.
There's also a truck. In Dallas, they have the Millions Are Good Without God
yeah.
things on the side of buses.
Oh, that's right.
And a Christian group has hired a truck with a personal message from God to everybody to just follow the bus around.
Yeah. I mean, stalk the bus.
Yeah. So you've got buses driving around town with an ad on it from a secular organization, and it's being followed around town by a bus from a Christian organization to, you know, give their countermeasure.
It's just hard to imagine how pathetic that is. I mean, my God.
Yeah, and, of course, Dave Silverman, the president of American Atheists, has been on Fox News, I don't know how many times now, on different panels, and it was some of it was pretty amusing.
Wow, I heard there's one in some state. I can't remember what. I think it was Florida. One of the slogans that the atheists put up was Mithras is the reason for the season.
I haven't seen that one yet. I'm still waiting for the axial tilt is the reason for the season billboard.
Yeah, well, I mean, it just shows how legitimately scared they are of anything that's challenging the status mm-hmm. quo. I don't know. It's just a very weird reaction.
Yeah. And when do most theologians put the birth of Jesus?
Oh, generally they tend to agree on in the spring sometime around yeah. April or whatever, yeah. Well, I think. I may be wrong. It might be. In any case, you know, we're
it's
talking about
Christmas.
Somebody who, for all intents and purposes, is mythic,
yep.
even if there was a real person. Who cares? So,
also, well, I'd like to also wish that everyone had a happy Hanukkah, you know? I just like to throw
and
that out.
And Solstice and Festivus solstice. And whatever you're going to...
The solstice hasn't happened yet, so
yeah.
have a happy Solstice. I don't know when Festivus went down. Or is
I think
down.
It's like on Christmas Day.
Think
I think
Christmas
they just
Day?
Share.
All right.
Maybe it's happy, a day after Christmas.
Happy
the feats
Festivus.
Of strength. Yeah.
And then Happy New Year and Valentine's Day and
President's Day.
Day.
Yeah.
And everything.
St. Patrick's Day.
St. Patrick's.
You know.
President's Day. That's pretty sick.
St. Patrick's is one of those things where just right there in the name, you know that it's got religious origins, but it's all about wearing green and drinking beer. So, I mean.
It's
I don't really
best
see that as that much.
Yeah. Ever.
And snakes.
Why did it have yeah. to be snakes?
Yeah. So, I don't know if you guys all saw this. I'm pretty sure by now almost everybody has. There are parts of this that I loved and parts that I didn't. In Hawaii.
Oh, yeah.
The
that's right.
State Senate President Colleen Hanabusa introduced a reverend to say the invocation. And an individual stood up and said his name and said that he objected to the prayer on the grounds that it's a violation of the First Amendment of the Constitution of the United States. And his objection lasted a few seconds, and he reportedly sat down, although in the video I hear him say something else. And I also hear another woman who wasn't part of the scuffle afterwards. When the preacher gets to the end of his prayer and thanks, and she waits, and she does what I think is the right thing. Granted, there's no good secular reason to be having these prayers at all. So I have no objection to Mitch's standing up and objecting to us. But she was a little more clever. Because when the minister gets to the point where he says, in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that's when you hear her say her name and I object. Now, you probably would have heard more from her, and the reason I like her objection is that because she waited until it was clear and obvious that this was a sectarian prayer that was a gross violation.
Yeah.
And the reason you don't get to hear much of her objection is because at that point, the original objector is being dragged out of the auditorium, and then the cameraman is assaulted while trying to film it, and they broke the camera. It went to trial, and the district court judge took about a half hour to find him not guilty. They actually pressed charges against him, the guy objecting. Which
charge,
is just
charge the victim.
Which is just asinine.
Right.
And she found him not guilty.
He was, like, causing a disturbance or something, they said?
Yeah, whatever.
Disturbing the peace.
They're talking about countersuing and pressing charges, and I think they should.
Absolutely.
But it's not just a matter of pressing charges. I want to know why the district attorney has not pressed charges against those individuals for assault.
Right.
Because anybody who watches this video knows that this was a violation of this individual's rights and that it was an excessive force in removing him and accosting the cameraman. That individual who smacked the camera into that guy's, you know, face, shoulder, whatever, that's battery.
Right.
I want to know why those guys are not serving jail time.
Wasn't one of the security thugs, you know, yelling at the guy to shut off the camera because, like, you know, he says, "You're breaking the law right now."
The cameraman is yelling, "You're breaking the law."
The cameraman is saying it.
The cameraman is yelling, "You're breaking the law." And they were. Where is the district attorney to file charges against these religious fucking thugs who run around assaulting people who legitimately exercise their First Amendment rights to object to abuses of that? Now, I will say that I don't think that standing up in city council meetings and trying to talk over somebody as an objection is the best course of action.
I don't think it's great either, but it is like a double standard because that's exactly what was happening in those first beginnings of the Tea Party movement when they stood up and specifically started screaming at people who were who were talking about healthcare.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing about that is it worked when you come right down to it.
Yeah, and I can't deny results. He got more publicity for his particular outburst against this violation than a lot of other people have because there have been a number of objections to city council things. And what normally happens is when you go by the procedure, you wait until you're called up to the podium to make your statement, and they all sit there politely and thank you. And, you'll get called, and you'll get to make your little statement, and they say politely and thank you, and then they move on to the next order of business because you've been allowed to speak your mind.
Right.
I'm being informed by T. Scott in the chat room that the woman was his wife. I don't know if he's talking about the camera person or the other woman who stood up and shouted, and that the guy was interviewed by FFRF.org, so you can probably check out their website, and it'll be up.
Cool.
I'd like to say that, I don't know, I don't think that you should have had to have wait for him to say the Jesus Christ part, because that prayer to me was just so blatantly, theistic in its nature that I don't think that there should be degrees of how religious a prayer,
how specific it has to be.
How specific it has to be for it's a violation. I mean,
well, there is.
I mean, I know legally there is because you can refer to a God or an Almighty as long as you don't get specific about which one. But the Jesus was legally the specific thing that made it illegal because then that identified which God it was. But I feel like appealing to any God.
That's not what I'm saying.
Well, that's legally. I mean, I checked it out.
No, what I'm saying is that it was clearly a violation from the beginning.
Yeah.
As soon as he made an appeal to God. Because you could give a relatively secular or even ecumenical invocation, which would not necessarily, as a matter of law, be a violation. But from the beginning, and I'll play the prayer, from the beginning, he violates it right off the bat. So Mitch was correct to object when he did. But I think that when his wife came in, was smarter strategically, because that's the point at which it becomes clear to everybody, not just theists, that there's something specific to object. You can object at any point and you'd be right. But if you wait until they've made like the catastrophic, blatantly obvious thing from a, from a point of strategy, that's the better point. Plus,
I mean, I'm not okay with letting things just get to the worst part. I mean, I would like to object just as soon as it crosses that line.
Plus, by waiting till the prayer is over, you don't look like an ass who's just trying to talk over to somebody. You're objecting to something that just happened. I have no problem at all with objecting early. I just don't think it's the best move. I don't think you get people on your side or people to agree with your position, or to say, yeah, you were acting, you know, rationally in the spirit of, you know, you look, if you object immediately, no matter how right you are.
I object to what you're saying in the middle of what you're saying.
There you go. you end up looking like.
I still object.
Okay, so here's the prayer.
Okay.
Will the Senate please come to order? This morning we're honored to have Reverend Dr. David Hotney of the Olivet Baptist Church to deliver the invocation. Will the members and the audience please rise?
Would you bow with me in prayer? Father, we thank you for this day. We thank you for your love for us and the opportunity to be in this place.
Okay. So, at the point he objects, the only thing that he had said to make it a necessarily a theistic prayer is Father.
Right.
Which could be relatively ecumenical.
I suppose.
It doesn't make it any less objectionable. But strategically, if you wait till the end of the prayer, which I'll go ahead and finish playing the rest of it, and you can hear when the other objection comes in, now you've got something that all of a sudden you've got Jews and Muslims and countless other citizens who are going to, you know, say, yeah, that should have been objected to.
We pray, Lord, that as you lead us this morning, we might listen to your voice, hear your word, be led by your spirit. Today, Lord, we thank you for the people in this room who lead us, who've given of their time, of their effort, of their expertise to lead the people of Hawaii. We pray today that you might give them success. Help them, Lord, to have success in leading. Help them to have success in reaching out to the people of Hawaii who need their help. Help us to be able to support them as they lead us. Lord, give us a good day today. We ask all these things in the name of your son, Jesus Christ. Amen.
I don't think that applies to Jews and Muslims up until the Jesus part, because
right.
I don't know any Jews who refer to their God as the Father.
It's...
I mean...
And
I don't know...
Right. I'm not sure about that.
And I am pretty sure that Muslims do not refer to their God as the Father as well.
That's not the point.
And I mean, every other religion is also getting left out.
All right.
And non-religion.
I understand all that. The point is, early on in the prayer, it's rather innocuous. It's still objectionable. It's still a violation. But when you object the second a prayer starts, you're not going to sound as good as you are when you wait till the one that is necessarily explicitly exclusive.
It was exclusive from the beginning.
I
mean, if they hadn't added the Jesus, it would have been just as exclusive.
Not only do I not agree, but my point is that most people wouldn't necessarily recognize that. Praying in the name of Jesus versus a rather innocuous prayer to Father, which could apply to a number of religions.
It could have been
a Native American standing up there talking about the Great Father.
It wasn't, though.
I know it wasn't. My point is that strategically, if you wait till the explicit problem at the end, you have a better case. How do you have a good the perception that we get is that we're a bunch of angry atheists who want to remove all references to God from or any religious reference from the public sphere.
Right. We just knee-jerk naysay everything.
And so
I'm
when
fine with that as long as it's by government stuff. I mean, if it's part of the government, it should not be including religious stuff.
Well, we.
I mean, that's taking up government.
Get no
time.
Argument.
Okay, I don't agree. I don't disagree.
Okay.
But 80 some odd fucking percent of Americans do, and those are the people that you have to convince. And so, if you do a knee jerk reaction the second there's a prayer, you do not gain as many potential supporters as you do if you wait until the end, because now you're not talking over somebody who's offering a prayer, which is. Which has been, in general, legally sanctioned.
I mean, if you care about getting potential supporters, then what you should be doing is just agreeing to the prayer. Because that'll get you more supporters.
Wow. First of all, who doesn't care about getting potential support for a position? But if you don't care about getting potential support, what you just said is if you don't care about getting support, you shouldn't object to the prayer.
If you care about getting support. If you're trying to maximize support without regard to any other faction, then you should just say, I agree with that prayer, because then you're agreeing with
no, you don't no get position. Support. You don't have, you're not in disagreement on the position. You're not maximizing support. You're eliminating opposition.
Exactly. So, I mean.
So you're saying if I want to get support for my idea that the prayer, that.
No,
that,
if you're just wanting to, if you're just caring about, in general, just getting support. Then you shouldn't be objecting to anything.
No, I'm talking about getting support for this issue.
Exactly. So, I mean, I don't think that you should be, going halfway on things. Saying it's okay to refer to the Father, but as soon as you refer to Jesus.
I didn't say that it was okay. I agreed from the beginning it was wrong. And I said that Mitch was okay to object there. I said the entire concept of the prayer is wrong. Mm-hmm. What I'm talking about is in the court of public opinion, if you are trying to convince people that these prayers are something that need to go away, and a knee-jerk objection as soon as a prayer starts is different from an objection after a prayer is over and after they have closed in the name of their specific deity.
I mean, it's okay if you wait until after it's over. I mean, I'll agree with that. But I don't think that it gets any more relatable once they add Jesus. Because to them, it's already the God of Jesus.
No.
So it doesn't matter. In the Christian eyes, was that a reference to any God? Or was that...
I'm not talking about in the Christian eyes.
Well, that's 86%. The positive thing about being a skeptic is admitting when you're wrong.
Yeah, and I wish you'd do it. Here we go. If you don't think that more people are going to find Jesus Christ objectionable in that prayer than Father, I don't know what to say to you.
Okay.
Out of the entire population, do you really think that there aren't more...
And that's what you care about. Why would that be what you care about?
In the entire population, do you think there are more people who are going to be objecting to the addition of Jesus Christ than there are to simply the saying Father?
It doesn't matter how many people.
Can you answer
objecting.
The question? It absolutely does when you're talking. Yes, it does.
It matters what's right and what's wrong.
No, it matters when you're talking about getting support for the position of removing it. If there are more people who object to this than this, then it is strategically better in gaining support for your position to object to the one that more people object to. It's simple math. 100 people, 90 aren't going to object to Father. 20 more are going to object as soon as you put Jesus on. Objecting to the Jesus gets you more supporters.
And it shouldn't matter about getting supporters. It should just matter what's right and
well,
what's
wrong. Well, yeah, it shouldn't matter.
It shouldn't, but we don't live in utopia. And until you get supporters, you have no possibility of making change with regard to what's right or wrong. I already agreed from the outset that it's wrong. I'm not saying that I've said, I don't know how many times I've said strategic about 20 times now. as a matter of strategy, as a matter of effecting change and gaining supporters, is what I'm talking about. Not about whether or not it is wrong. It was a violation from the second she said, we're going to have a minister come up here and deliver a prayer. That was wrong. Object before he starts the prayer on principle. That's fine, too. My whole point was regarding strategy of how do you get the most people to see clearly that this is a problem.
I'm just not willing to compromise okay. on those sorts of things.
Okay. All right.
Are we going to talk
other
about
news bits?
Alien life form?
I don't know. It's 4 o'clock. Aren't we about done?
Yeah, we're like at the close. But
okay.
The alien life form that's not an alien life form.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. You can go to Ferengula.
The rumors were rabid.
You can go to.
I would like to say about the alien life form that was not an alien life form. The arsenic thing that was not arsenic based.
Uh-huh.
I have a different spin on this, and that is that science has taken kind of the wrong tact with this, going back to the strategy stuff, in that they came up with something that's really cool, and it's not quite as cool as they first made out, but they should still be promoting how incredibly cool it is, instead of just stomping on how it wasn't, 100% cool, it's only 80% cool. It's
actually,
like, well, that's still really cool.
I'm not sure they have a cool.
I found it really cool until I read one of the deconstructions of the paper that reduced it from far lower than 80% cool to wow. There were questions about their methodology and the results about what they actually found. And I don't have any relevant expertise to assess it, so I'm going to say that it's at least cool that we're doing science that does things like this.
Yeah.
But the spinning of it in the media was not quite as cool.
We need more mad science.
It reminds me, Penrose has come out lately talking about evidence for multiple Big Bang events.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some people who are analyzing the evidence and talking about it. I'm not going to talk about it today because I don't understand it. I haven't studied it enough to even remotely talk about it. But it's one of those things along with M-theory, string theory, quantum, all these things that when they get out as cool ideas in the public and then we refine our understanding, the people who don't understand the way science works tend to look at that as a means of discouraging their reasoned support for scientific endeavors. That's just so frustrating because it's kind of backwards.
Yeah, or they'll pick up on some speculative piece of cutting-edge science and say, oh, well, science has proved this. And as long as it helps them make some kind of obscure theological point that no scientist would actually agree to.
Yeah, it's right. Like young Earth creationists are going to trust carbon dating when they're
yeah, exactly.
Validating the Shroud of Turin or some
right.
ancient text. But all right, Dennis, close us out, sir.
Bring it home, as it were. Hang on. Okay. Well, we do most cravenly ask forgiveness for our show and pray that no one was distressed or even discomfited by this episode, because I'm Dennis Loubet with Matt Dillahunty, Russell Glasser, and Linnea Daly, and we're going to do this again next week, unless, of course, the slightest hint of a hue and cry is raised. Oh, 2 weeks? Oh, the
January
8th. The 8th.
Apologize for your
Sorry.
Infraction, Dennis.
Yes, well, we didn't edit this thing, and... I knew this was going to happen. Until then, we regretfully risk offense with Billy Squire's Christmas is a Time to Say I Love You.
Christmas is a time to